From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 23rd day of March 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Gary Schnitke, ag economist from the University of Illinois, will be here to discuss taxes on Illinois farm inputs and how changing that, if it were to be brought up, as it periodically is, might really drastically change the income on a farm. And we'll also talk about renewable diesel and just what it is with one of the foremost renewable fuels experts on the planet, Scott Irwin. We'll hear about the agricultural weather forecast, too, with Don Day at Day Weather, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day at 551 and a quarter, up 2 1/4. July 534 and a quarter, 2 3/4 higher. In December, new crop up 1 3/4 cents at $4.69 3/4. May soybeans 1423 and a quarter, 5 3/4 higher. July at $14.11 1/4, up 7 1/4. New crop November, $12.23 a bushel, up 7.5 cents. The bean meal 220 higher at $3.98.80, and the bean oil at $57.02, 65 cents higher. Wheat soft red July at $6.26 1/4, up 7 cents. And the hard red July at $5.88 1/4, up 4 for the day. Live cattle futures in the nearby at 119.12 1/2, 35 cents higher. The feeders at 139.75, up 32 1/2, and lean hogs at $96.47 1/2, $1.42 1/2 higher for the day. Energy's trading crude oil down $3.82 a barrel. The U.S. diesel fuel is 8 2/10 cents lower. That's heating oil and gasoline at $1.88, and 8 cents is down 7 1/10 cents. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Well, great to be here, Todd.
Tell me what did happen in Chicago.
Well, you know, we started off overnight, sort of a slow trade again. Then we're higher most of the day on the on-again, off-again choppy trade that we're seeing here. We seem to be, looking at that the demand is tight on the corn. The basis levels continues to stay very tight on the interior, making it hard to buy corn. And it's just hard to sell a market off when the basis levels are that tight. People are wanting to own it and do that. As the day went on, we looked at our exports and saw that they increased all of the shipments, the week later a little bit. And looking at adding to the beans, getting strength out of the Malaysian palm oil and the palm oil and out of the green deals supposedly coming out of the Biden administration. So, we're seeing a little enthusiasm with that. A little surprised that wheat really took off, though, because our crop ratings continue to look good as far as the wheat goes. So I was a little bit surprised to see that pop up towards the end of the day.
The trade, I suppose, is looking forward to next Wednesday's grain stocks and prospective plantings figures. Do you have some numbers in mind?
Well, I think that, as we look ahead to that, we saw what used to be Informa Marquette now, I think, is they raised their corn number a little bit and decreased their bean planting number a little bit. And I think that that's going to be a big shift going on as they're trying to decide what they're going to do with that and how it goes ahead, because looking at both corn and beans this year, they're both very profitable. It's not trying to just squeak by and pick the best one. And I think a lot of people are going to stick with the rotation and maybe plant the extra acres, and that could put a little more corn acres out there than the beans they were looking for and hoping to get.
Well, I have a hogs and pigs report between then and now. I suppose livestock, just in general, because of the grain stocks report, are going to play a big role next week.
Well, I think, there was a lot of talk that the livestock numbers have been up, they've stayed up, and they would like to see a little more disappearance out of that because of good feed usage, because of the large numbers they've had. We've kept some pretty good numbers here with the livestock. We've kept some numbers, pork being shipped to China and around the world. So those numbers look to hope maybe cut the carry out a little bit with the increased livestock numbers we've seen.
Farmers still standing aside on old crop corn and soybean sales?
They're trying to catch up on what they've sold with the trucking. The rail lines and the trains have been slow coming into our area, we have seen limited dumping time. A lot of times, maybe only half days or 3 days a week. A lot of the terminals over here just trying to, they need a train to come in so they can dump more grain. These farmers are behind getting what they've already sold hauled in. Some of them, like we're Poets that was down at Cloverdale, they're paying their customers 33 cents to haul it over to their new Shelbyville plant because they quit making ethanol down at Cloverdale. But a lot of truck lines over here and a lot of farmers getting a little disgruntled that they can't get their corn moved.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist, to discuss his latest penning for the Farm Doc Daily website. Thank you for being with us, Gary. I see that you've written about sales tax on Illinois grain farms. What's the impetus?
Yeah, so there is a 6.25% sales tax in Illinois. That's the state portion of it. Municipalities and other government bodies can add to it. But grain farms are specifically exempt from that on fertilizer, seed, chemicals, all inputs. And we just took a look and saw if that was rescinded, what would they have been the impact on net income in the past.
Is there a reason you decided to do it, or were you just interested to see what the numbers look like?
Well, there's always discussion about rescinding those taxes as the state of Illinois looks to generate more revenue to cover items in the future.
Did you divide it up by parts of the state?
We did. So, and it will have probably, we divided up by northern, central, and southern Illinois. But just to give you a feel, there's an exemption on fertilizer, pesticide, and seeds. And we looked at this over 2015 to 2019. Average net farm income in northern Illinois was $57,700 over the average from 2015 to 2019. A elimination of the sales tax on fertilizer, pesticide, and seed, or the elimination of the exemption, would add $21,000 of sales revenue, or $21,000 of cost. And there's also exemption on machinery repairs, hire, and capital purchases. And if that was rescinded, that would have added another $13,000 of cost. So between the two of them, $33,000 of additional cost in terms of tax revenue on $57,000 of income. And that would be about just slightly over 50% of the income that happened.
Does that hold true across the bulk of the state?
It does. A little bit less in central Illinois, primarily because central Illinois had higher incomes than northern and southern Illinois over that 2015 through 2019 period. But still, you're looking at close to 45% in central Illinois.
Any summary to think of?
Oh, just as we look, as the state of Illinois looks at different items, one of those will be eliminating those sales tax and exemptions, and we're looking at the direct impact on farm income.
And the elimination would have a huge impact on the income that farmers have left available to them to live on.
That's true.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. Traders are mostly expecting next week's USDA quarterly grain stocks report to be positive to the corn market. However, the numbers tend to be a bit more elusive in years with corn quality problems. Last fall's corn harvest is a good example of a problem year. Iowa, the number one corn-producing state in the nation, had a twofold issue. First, there was a drought in the western part of the state. It's typically the most productive corn area in Iowa. Then the winds blew in eastern Iowa. The derecho devastated a huge area. Consequently, Iowa has a corn quality issue, and North Dakota State's Brain Olson explains that's a problem for USDA when it counts grain stocks.
So USDA has a much more difficult time in years where we have a corn quality problem to make sure we have the right number. And of course, once you run it across the scale, if you have a test weight problem, most farmers report their inventories based off, you know, the bushels in a bin, and may not always adjust for the quality attributes like a test weight or a moisture adjustment.
Here's how that works in the real world when USDA surveys farmers about how much corn they have in storage, says the NDSU Extension agricultural economist.
You know, when you answer your survey, you write it down as 12,000, but it might be something a little less than that by the time you take it out and you run it across a scale. And so, you know, when we're talking, you know, 5+ billion bushels of corn going into the livestock sector, you know, you start taking a couple percent here and a couple percent there for test weight adjustments and or moisture adjustments. And, you know, that adds up to some big bushels.
Now, USDA may have already made some adjustments for these issues. For instance, it reduced the national corn yield in January and grain stocks fell. It could be the traders expecting corn disappearance in the last quarter to follow what appeared to be big livestock demand for feed might be surprised by the March 31 figure. You know, over the last several months, you've heard discussions about renewable diesel on this program. Now, last week, I called Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin to see if he had been following its development. He has, but has not yet written about it for the FarmDoc Daily website. Nevertheless, Scott took the time to share with me some of his early impressions of the product and its potential within the agricultural sector to generate demand, especially for soybean. Here's part of the discussion I had with Irwin.
It sure looks like we're going to add at least 2 billion gallons of renewable diesel capacity in the next 2 to 3 years, which is a giant amount of feedstock. But here's what people are missing, and this is the big question. How much of what we can now, what I would now call FAME biodiesel, which is the fatty acid methyl ester traditional biodiesel, is this going to cannibalize? That's the big question, the big unknown. Because renewable diesel is a little bit more favorable for under the RFS, but not one. And instead of 1.5, it gets 1.6 or 1.7 RINs. But the real big thing is renewable diesel, it gets much higher carbon credits in California. And so renewable diesel will definitely cannibalize quite a bit of the FAME biodiesel market. We just don't know how much. Goldman Sachs says that we'll never produce another gallon more FAME biodiesel than we are today. It's really a very, it's got some stark implications for the distribution of what we call biodiesel in the U.S.
Is the idea that soybean is going to be the primary feedstock? For this because of the ease of availability for it, or is there, what about corn oil or any other oil? Because it can all be used, right?
That's the real issue going forward. Is that's why, you know, Goldman's analysis is that not all these renewable diesel plants will get built because there just isn't enough feedstock to make them economically feasible without blowing out global fat and oil prices. Because it's interesting. What I've learned, like I said, I've really been digging in on the details of it, I just haven't written much, is that renewable diesel actually uses, and this makes total sense once you understand the production process, a bit more feedstock than FAME biodiesel does. Because they have to heat it up and it's under pressure, it's a little less efficient use of the feedstock. So it takes about 7.8 pounds of feedstock to make a gallon of renewable diesel, where it's about 7.5 pounds for FAME biodiesel. But it is definitely a big deal. It is the next version of the biofuels boom. It's definitely coming. It's already being felt in world vegetable oil markets. But there's, you know, a lot of uncertainty about predicting its impacts moving forward. Number one, how many of the plants on the in the planning stage are ever going to break ground and be built? And then number two, if they do get built, what kind of pressure will they put on feedstock prices? And how much of traditional FAME biodiesel demand will they cannibalize? Those are the big questions.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to give us some answers.
Well, that's on the planning stage. We've got a few more things I'm going to write about. But you're right. It's a big story. And but the real interesting part of it is it's being driven not by the RFS. It's being driven by the LCFS.
You know, the low carbon
fuel standard in California.
So I've been covering it, I mean, on and off for a while. And then Reuters broke the story that, or put out that story that USDA was going to add a line to the soybean S&D table for it.
Well, there's more going on than that. The EIA has never separated out renewable diesel production from FAME biodiesel production. And they're going to start doing that.
Right. So that, yeah. So USDA's number is going to come from the EIA, but they have to wait until the EIA has their number in place. That's correct.
But you can actually, it'll be interesting. You can actually measure it pretty well now based on RINs. The RINs distinguish between the different classifications. And so that's how I have estimated it. I have actually estimated all this with, if you'll look at all my biodiesel supply articles on FarmDoc Daily,
mm-hmm.
I have different lines for FAME. I don't call it FAME, but it's different categories of D4 RINs. Are the 1.6 and 1.7s are renewable diesel.
What is FAME? Is that an acronym or out? And how's
it? Right. It's not used a lot. It's used a lot in Europe. FAME biodiesel is fatty acid methyl ester. That's the process used like at the Cargill biodiesel plant up in Gibson City.
Yeah.
That's how you make what we think of as biodiesel. You just take veg oil or fats and oils and you add a catalyst to it. You got to get the water and glycerin out of it. And you've got what we call biodiesel. But as we know, biodiesel is not a drop-in fuel. You just can't fill up a diesel engine with 100% FAME biodiesel, and it won't work. It'll gum up. So that's why you have typically low blends of 2 to 5, maybe up to 20%. But that's what we think of as biodiesel. Really should technically now, to keep things straight, that's why you see in my writings, Todd, I now always use the terms FAME biodiesel and renewable diesel. And because they're completely different products. And then in the RFS, both of those come under the heading of biomass-based diesel. So those are the three terms. Biomass-based diesel is the umbrella category. So both FAME biodiesel and renewable diesel are eligible for compliance with the biomass-based diesel mandate. There's actually no biodiesel mandate in the RFS. It's called biomass-based diesel so that it can accommodate FAME biodiesel and renewable diesel.
Everybody needs to understand what this product is.
Yes, because it is going to be a big deal. There is no doubt about that. But there's some real large uncertainties about exactly where it's going to go. And I always tell people, I'm always interested what's the impact on corn and soybean farmers, you know, on corn and soybean prices. And it's not as easy as ethanol was.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He's one of the foremost experts in the field of renewable fuels as it relates to the agricultural economy. Irwin expects to begin penning articles on renewable diesel for the FarmDoc daily website soon. Let's check the weather forecast on this Tuesday afternoon with Don Day. He's a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I sure hope your Tuesday is going better this week than it did last week, Don.
Yeah, it's snowing, but it's not piling up like it was a week ago.
And you didn't have to walk to work today, I take it.
That's right. No snowshoes today.
Good deal. So that moisture, which you're getting there, is rainfall in other parts of the Midwest. Can you tell me what's been changing as we've moved into spring?
Well, we've definitely had not just one, but two pretty significant storm systems get some areas with rain that, if you had been watching the drought monitor, where conditions were really dry across portions of Nebraska, portions of northwest Iowa, parts of southeast South Dakota, going all the way back into western Kansas and eastern Colorado. Some of those areas that were in some pretty strong drought areas have seen two slow-moving storms bringing a combination of rain and snow. And today we're seeing some really good widespread rains across central and eastern Nebraska into central and western areas of Iowa. And those areas will see more here over the next 48 hours. So while the new drought monitor that comes out Thursday is still going to show a lot of the western plains and far western areas still in drought conditions, there has been a little bit of a bite taken out of it in some of those areas. Now, you'd expect that in the spring. You expect a couple of storms to help out as it is getting to be that time of year where it gets more moist. But certainly it's good news, especially for that Iowa-Nebraska area.
Are those storm fronts moving across the whole of the Midwest?
They will, although I think you're going to definitely see an area that gets that heavier moisture will be in those western and northwestern areas. We do see, however, southern and central Illinois, Indiana, into Ohio, and into lower Michigan getting into some shower and thunderstorm activity and better chances for rain. And this really gets going, you know, starting late tomorrow and into Thursday and Friday and the weekend. So the eastern Corn Belt going to get into the action as well.
Soybean and corn farmers both in the Delta and into the southeastern region of the United States, even in Texas, are wanting to put some seed in the ground. What will conditions be like over the next week?
Well, while we're talking about some areas wanting the rain, there's going to be some areas down south that would like a break because it is going to be wet across portions of central and eastern Texas, across some of that lower Delta area. There's going to be plenty of rainfall, as much as 2 to 4 inches here over the next week to 10 days. So they may have to wait a little bit longer.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.